This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents The Mystwick School of Music Craft, written by Jessica Corey, performed by Susie Jackson, music performed by members of the NJSO Youth Orchestras.
Chapter 1. Prelude for a Chicken. It's harder to charm a chicken than you might think. I guess it's because they have such tiny brains. Nothing against the chicken, of course. It's not like it asked to be stupid. That's just the way it is. Not that I'm in any sort of position to judge. After all, I am lying flat on my back on a ground definitely covered in chicken poop, my upper half wedged under a shed, and my flute clenched between my lips as I shimmy farther in. It's hard to charm a chicken in any position, but doing so while wedged under a shed is not exactly ideal. I'm pretty sure my music teacher would confiscate my instrument if she saw me like this. But sometimes, life requires you to rescue a trapped chicken with a bit of magic, even if it means getting a little dirty. Taking my flute out of my mouth, after thoroughly wiping my grubby palms on my jeans, of course, I try the regular non-magic route one more time. Here, chicken. The little rebel I'm after is crammed just above me, between the shed and the fence on the other side. She's attempting an ambitious escape, pecking at the metal fence wire. Sighing, I turn my head just slightly and purse my lips over the flute's embouchure. It's an awkward angle, with my face half planted in dirt. And I wonder if this is really worth the $5 Mrs. O'Grady offered me. "Just a simple chicken charm, Amelia," she'd said this morning, standing on our front porch, her cheeks ruddy from working in her little vegetable garden. "It's that rooter. She's got herself jammed again, I'm afraid." Well, I do need the $5. My fingers find the flute's keys, arranging themselves in preparation. Before I start, I take a few deep breaths. It's no good playing when your heart's bouncing around your chest like a basketball in a washing machine. I might set Rooter and me and the whole chicken coop on fire. As the first rule of music craft states, a spell can charm or do great harm. Before you play, clear the way. When I'm good and still inside, I purse my lips, then launch into the spell that usually works on Rooter. The ants go marching. A simple tune, good for calming someone's nerves and, if that someone's a chicken, luring them out from under a shed. I could play it in my sleep, but it's not just about hitting the right notes. It's also about keeping tempo and staying focused, or I won't produce any magic at all. Go too fast or slow, and the spell will fall apart. Play it in the wrong key, and its effects could reverse, and I could end up scaring Rooter away rather than drawing her to me. Anyone can pick up a flute and blow into it, but to turn music into magic, you have to play it right. Mrs. O'Grady could have probably played the spell on her old harmonica and done the trick, if she weren't going tone deaf. And I know she is because I once saw her try to summon an apple off a branch too high to reach. The apple exploded instead. So you can see why her attempting a charm on Rooter might end badly. A few notes in, the spell starts to work. The magic isn't strong. A few white wisps of light curl away from my flute and fade, shimmering, into the muddy ground. They reflect in Rooter's black eyes. On the second repetition, the chicken's head perks in my direction, and she stops her mindless pecking at the fence. Her head twitches this way and that, her feathers ruffle, and then she scoots my way. Curlicues of light swirl around her, the spell drawing her along and infusing her tiny chicken brain. "That's it," I think. "Come on, you old feather butt." The magic swirls around like white feathers, and when it lands on my skin, I feel the slightest tingle, sort of like snowflakes, there and then gone. I focus on Rooter, directing the flow of magic to her and not some other chicken in the yard. Playing while distracted is dangerous. The magic could get out of control fast without my willpower harnessing it and giving it a clear target. So I force myself to keep all my attention on the bird. But Rooter stops dead, then begins to reverse, Chicken Rump wiggling this way and that as she shimmies back to the fence. I've lost hold of her. My stomach clenches with frustration. I don't have much time till I have to catch the train to the city. Before then, I'll have to shower, pack lunch and my sheet music, and squeeze in a last-minute practice session. It's not like my entire future is on the line here, McNugget, I growl, catching my breath before trying again. What's that, dear? Mrs. O'Grady calls. I turn my head till I can see her feet, woolly socks and sandals below the hem of her flowered nightgown. Mrs. O'Grady has reached the age where it's perfectly acceptable for her to wear a flowered nightgown no matter the place or occasion. Just making conversation, I say, adding under my breath, with a chicken. Oh, that's nice, she replies. Rooter's a good one for a chat. Understanding eyes. I look at Rooter's eyes. They wobble at me. Wincing, I start playing again. It takes two repetitions of the melody before I can get Rooter's attention once more. This time, I give it all I've got, keeping my gaze locked on the chickens until she starts moving forward again. Shimmying along, flute glued to my chin, I dare not go a smidgen faster, or I'll risk messing up and breaking the spell. Finally, I clear the shed, still playing, and Rooter is just a few chicken steps behind. The minute she's in the open, Mrs. O'Grady scoops her up and cuddles her, cooing and fussing. I finish the spell, then lie in the dirt and chicken poo a moment, catching my breath. Oh, Amelia, thank you, dear, Mrs. O'Grady says. Now, haven't you got somewhere to be? I blink up at her. The sun's in my eyes, and I shield it with a hand. Gran told you about that? Mrs. O'Grady strokes Rooter's neck, and the bird coos happily. You sound surprised. I grunt, looking down at the ground. She doesn't really like music craft much. No doubt that's because you remind her of your mother. Mrs. O'Grady sighs. I remember her at your age, running around in the woods with that flute, charming the squirrels right out of the trees. Such a shame what happened to her. I remember once my kitchen caught fire, and your mother, no bigger than you are now, came running over and put it out with a spell. Saved the house. Swallowing, I squeeze my flute a little tighter. Gran never told me that. Well, now, she does miss your mother an awful lot. Even after 8 years, it's hard for your Gran to speak of her. Mrs. O'Grady hands me a folded bill. Here, now. You earned it.
Thanks. I take the money and blink. Mrs. O, this is too much. Maybe her eyesight is going as bad as Rooter's. She gave me a 20, not a 5.
Hush, she scolds, patting Rooter's head. Now run home. Tell your grandmother I'll be around with more eggs tomorrow.
Okay. Then my attention snags on her watch, and I jump like I've been electrocuted. It's 9 o'clock already? I shriek. Holy Mother of Beethoven, I have to go.
Good luck, Amelia. You make us proud now, Mrs. O'Grady calls as I dash away, leaping over the fence around the chicken yard.
It's only a minute's walk across Mrs. O'Grady's farm and through the weeds to Gran's house, but I cut it in half by going at a dead sprint, my flute clutched in my hand like a runner's baton. By the time I reach the front porch, I'm completely soaked in sweat. It's midsummer and the sun beats down like a spotlight. Even the pine trees behind the house look droopy, defeated by the heat. Gran, I shout, running inside and letting the door slam behind me. Gran! She comes walking out of the kitchen, covered in flour, her hair still in rollers.
Now, now, no shouting inside, please.
Gran! I look her up and down, stomach dropping. What are you doing?
You should be ready to go. We're going to be late.
Late? She frowns. For what?
My audition. I wave my flute, incredulous.
Oh.
She sighs and wipes her hands on her apron.
Is that today?
Gran. I grab her keys and thrust them into her hand. We have to go now. We're already going to miss the first train. There's another that leaves soon after, but missing the first one means I'll barely make it to the audition in time. She blinks at my clothes.
Don't you want to change first?
She's stalling on purpose. That's probably even why she sent me to help Mrs. O'Grady, hoping I'd forget about my audition. Gran is no fan of music craft. All my life, she's suggested other forms of self-expression, giving me sports equipment for Christmas, making me try out for the school play, signing me up for horse riding lessons and swim team and Girl Scouts, anything that wasn't musical. But none of it stuck. None of it called to me the way magic does. Always, I found my way back into Mrs. Parrish's after-school music craft classes with the other kids in my little town who had musical talent. At first, we learned kiddie stuff, weak summoning spells on plastic recorders, or making our lunchboxes float with kazoos. But that wasn't enough for me. Mrs. Parrish somehow persuaded Gran to let her teach me on the weekends. And soon, it became my obsession. I practiced hours every day, woke up early to play before school, rode my bike to Mrs. Parrish's house whenever she'd open her door for me. I've probably spent more time with that flute pressed to my chin than I have sleeping or studying or anything else. By third grade, I could outplay all the other kids in elementary school. By fifth grade, I was getting invited to play with the high school marching band. I'll never forget the day Mrs. Parrish told Gran I might be the best musician she'd ever taught. Gran had huffed and sighed and looked at me like I was a crossword puzzle she was about to give up on. But I'd still glowed like a light bulb with pride.
Amelia could be a true maestro, Mrs. Parrish had said. Only the second one to ever come from our town.
Only the second one after my mother. But it'll all be for nothing if I miss this audition. Leaving her to clean up, I race through the house and throw a change of clothes into a bag, my heart pounding. Then I stuff in my sheet music and a bottle of grape juice. If I'm late for the audition, they won't even give me a chance to play. I'll be cut, just like that. I can't think of a stupider reason to ruin the single greatest opportunity I'll ever have.
Let's go, let's go! We're going to miss the 9:30 train, I yell.
And I race through the house, leaping over the coffee table and sprinting outside. Gran ambles out, taking her time. While she drives 5 miles under the speed limit, I clean my flute and go over my audition music in my mind, again and again, until the notes are engraved onto my brain. It's only 3 miles to the train station, and I'm starting to think riding my bike there would have been faster. We drive by my school, which is quiet and empty during the summer, looking smaller without all the buses and kids. I see the trailer where my music craft class meets and press my hand to the window in farewell. If today goes well, I may never set foot in my old school again. It makes me sad to think about, but also queasy with nerves and excitement. I can do this, I remind myself. I have to do this. I open my flute case and stare at the photo taped to the inside. It's the one thing that makes me feel calm before an audition or recital. It's been with me for as long as I've played the flute, always reminding me why I'm doing this. This picture is one of the only ones I have of my mom. She was just 18 in it, with curly dark hair and dimples. In the photo, beneath her graduation gown, she was wearing a sweater, and on the sweater was a crest, a wreath of ivy around a harp, and the word Mistwick. I was 4 when she died. My dad disappeared after it happened, and no one knows where he went. I guess he loved her so much that he didn't have enough love left for me. Of him, I have few memories at all, mostly of a deep laugh coming from someone who was always just out of sight. When I think of my parents, usually I just remember Mom, playing her flute, the same one I'm holding now, filling the air with crackling, glowing magic. But even of those vague memories, I'm not always sure which ones are real and which ones I made up. "Gran," I say cautiously. "Mrs. O told me my mom once put out a kitchen fire for her. You never told me that." Gran snorts.
"That Clara is a gossip. Can't keep her mouth shut for anything."
"Were you there? Did you see it?" But instead of answering, Gran just frowns at the road ahead. Her eyes pinch and her lips press flat, and like she always does when I ask about Mom, she closes up tighter than a scared turtle. Well, I know one thing for sure. My mom is the reason I always hear music in the back of my mind. She is why I love musicraft, the art of spinning sound into spells. She is why I dream of it every night and long for it every day. It's a part of me because it was a part of her. I need to find out how much of her lives in me. And that means starting at the place she loved most, the Mistwick School of Musicraft. Chapter 2, The Itsy Bitsy Fire. We have to walk 4 blocks from the train station to the hotel where the auditions are. I spent the whole 2-hour trip watching the brass trio play the locomotion spell that powered the great metal train. And now I hum their spell as I walk beside Gran. The street is lined with tall brick buildings, the sidewalks flooded with people hurrying in all directions. Cars jam the road, horns blaring, taxi drivers leaning out of their windows to shout. This is only the second time I've been to the city. The first time, I came with Mrs. Parrish and the other music craft students from school to see a movie at the big cinema. That was one of the best nights of my life. They had a maestro who played the film score on the piano while we watched it, and her spells had produced all kinds of effects. Wind, rain, fireworks. So it had felt like we were in the movie. I'd been so starry-eyed afterward, I'd barely noticed anything else after we left the cinema. But now, I look around with my mouth hanging open, eyes as round as cymbals. There is magic everywhere. I've never seen so many types of instruments, or heard so many different spells being played at once. Summoning and hovering spells, illusions and glamours. The air carries the smoky smell of magic, like the scent of a match right after you blow out the flame. Through the open windows of a cafe, I hear a pianist playing a complicated concerto that delivers diners' plates and cups on glittering ribbons of magic. Across the street, on a 5th-floor balcony, a little girl plays Au Clair de la Lune on a plastic recorder, her magic coaxing a small potted lily to unfurl its petals. I recognize that spell. It's a common practice piece for young musicians, and I remember playing it over and over when I first began my training, until I was hearing it in my sleep. But the girl is having trouble focusing, because several balconies over, a man with a jug and a pair of castanets is playing a messy wind spell, perhaps trying to cool down his apartment. I wince at the din he produces. Just because anyone can play a spell doesn't mean they should. I watch them until Gran shouts at me to look where I'm going. I'd nearly tripped over a storm drain. Newsstands bristle with papers, headlines screaming things like, "Tokyo Philharmonic staves off deadly typhoon," and "Nigerian maestro composes new cancer-fighting spell." But is it too good to be true? People on the corners hawk rolled spells in plastic tubes, or hand out flyers advertising spectacular performances by Musicraft's best illusionists. Witness conjuration of cosmic proportion, one night only. I take every flyer they thrust at me, eyes wide, until Gran scowls and shoves them all into a recycling bin, muttering about charlatans. I bounce impatiently alongside her, while the sounds of the city sweep over us. My ears can't help but pick up the melodies hidden in the noise. Every place has its own music, if you listen hard enough. The woods have a quiet, whispery nocturne, all swishing leaves and wind, one of my favorite sounds. It makes me want to lie down and close my eyes and just breathe. But the city is a symphony, so many sounds all clashing and blending, rising and falling, honking cars, shouting people, and, of course, the street musicians who perform magic for spare change. We pass a man who offers to smooth the wrinkles from Graham's face with a spell from his accordion. "Honestly," huffs Gran, not even giving him a glance. But she looks at me with a scowl. "This is what you want to do with your life, Amelia?" "These people are novices," I point out. "When I've graduated from Mistwick, I'll be a maestro, Gran, like Mom. You know that." She always pretends she doesn't know anything about music craft, like it's not important to remember the difference between novices and maestros, as if pretending none of it exists could convince me to stop playing. Mrs. Parrish explained it to me years ago. While novices are small-time spell workers, maestros are more powerful, specially trained musicians. In groups called symphonies, they travel the world, calming hurricanes and bringing rain to droughts and building bridges, all kinds of wonderful and beautiful things. Novices use their magic in small ways, like healing colds or propelling trolleys down the street. But maestros? Maestros change the world. But to earn that special gold pin, you have to pass a series of very difficult maestric exams, which is almost impossible to do without the training found at the world's top music craft schools like Mistwick. And they only take the best of the best. There are other schools, of course, like the Music Craft Academy in this very city where Mrs. Parrish went, but not many people go there to become maestros. Instead, they train to be music craft teachers or instrument makers, which are also important jobs. But I've always known that I wanted to be a maestro, like my mom, like the people in the symphonies on the television. A trolley rolls past, wheels sparking with golden magic, thanks to the saxophonist standing at the back, sweat shining on his face as he plays Over the Rainbow. Across the street, I spot a 5-piece brass ensemble in hard hats, aiding a construction crew with a hovering spell that lifts heavy beams and tools. Banners of golden magic unfurl from their instruments and slink through the air like slender dragons. Back in our little town, there's only one professional musician besides our music teacher, Mr. Meadows. He's a guitarist who mostly does small spells in his little shop downtown, curing headaches, finding lost keys and pets, substituting when Mrs. Parrish can't teach our class. As a novice, he can't do high-level magic, but he'll usually show me a few new tricks when I ask. Sometimes, he even pays me a little to help him. Things like growth spells when they reseeded the baseball field, or even once, playing an elemental spell to hold off rain on the day of the big town-wide picnic. Gran knows nothing about that, or she'd probably have sold my flute on the spot, thinking I was trying magic too big for me. But there aren't many people back home who could play such spells, and certainly no other kids my age who could pull them off. But here, it seems there's a musician on every corner. I've never seen so much magic at work all at once. The air is thick with it, glittering light and glowing ribbons of every color. I slow in front of a spellstone store and peer through the window at the racks and racks of sheet music for sale, with spells covering everything from novice healing magic and illusion work to restricted, dangerous spells that can only be bought and played by maestros. I could spend hours in there, just leafing through all those papers. I've always dreamed of going into a Spellstones. They're the most famous chain of music stores in the world. They say you can find any sort of spell on their shelves. Spells to recover lost memories or banish thunderstorms, or slow the melting of the glaciers. But then I see the tall building ahead, and I grab Gran's hand. "There it is," I shout, "the hotel where the auditions are." I recognize it from the search I did on the library computer back when I first submitted my application. I glance at Gran's watch. My audition slot is in just 20 minutes. If we'd made the earlier train, I'd have had time to practice beforehand. But now I'll be glad if I just get a chance to change clothes first. Gran shakes her head.
Go on, then. I'll catch up to you. But Amelia, be careful. Watch out for...
I'll be fine, Gran. I don't need to be given permission twice. I race ahead, pushing through the crowds on the sidewalk and clutching my flute case to my chest. I skid around the corner and then find myself standing right in front of it. The Hotel Rhapsody. Tall and glass and modern. The building is fancy. Seriously fancy. I almost wait for Gran to catch up, but being even a minute late might cost me everything. So I put one foot in front of the other and walk past the two sparkling fountains to a huge revolving glass door. The lobby echoes with voices and the splashing of an artificial waterfall that tumbles from the third floor. A valet walks and plays a guitar, and from it, yellow streamers of magic unfurl to carry a line of suitcases for a guest. I stare at him for a few minutes, wondering how he can juggle so many pieces at once. The silver music note pinned to his uniform designates him as a novice, but the spell sounds pretty complicated. His fingers a blur as they pick the strings. Off to one side is a table with a little sign on it. Mistwick School of Music Craft Auditions. A woman sits behind it, shuffling through a stack of papers. I hurry over and set my flute on the floor, then cough to get the woman's attention. She looks up, frowning.
Cutting it close, aren't we?
I wince. Sorry. There was this chicken and it was stuck and then we missed the first train. You know what, never mind. She sets aside her papers.
Name?
Amelia Jones, 12 years old. My birthday is April 3rd.
Just the name will do, thank you.
She hands me a paper with the number 242 on it. And as I give her my audition fee, mostly cash I earned charming chickens and doing odd jobs for neighbors, I think, there are 241 other auditions today? How many spots are there? I ask. She blinks at the stack of mostly $1 bills, then sighs.
There are 100 seats available in the freshman 7th grade class, with 4 openings for flutists.
My heart drops. Kids fly to the United States from all over the world just to audition. Who knows how many more are trying out altogether? There are auditions being held all over the country this week, so probably thousands. All of them just as eager as I am to get into Mistwick.
Young lady?
The woman at the desk eyes me.
Are you all right? You look pale.
Fine. I mumble. How long till they call me? She consults a paper, then says,
You have about 10 minutes, I imagine. You're lucky I let you in at all. Punctuality is key in a Mistwick musician.
I smile weakly. Right. Sorry. Looking out the front windows, I spy Gran waiting for a light to cross the street. Figuring I'd better use this time to clean up, I hurry past the waterfall and a restaurant where fancy people are eating fancy little meals. Glancing across the lobby, I see Ballroom A, where I'm supposed to wait for my audition to start. Looks like there are a bunch of kids there already, and I can hear them warming up. Discordant notes echo through the lobby. The woodsy drone of cellos beneath plinking piano and aggressive trumpets. In the marble bathroom behind the restaurant, I wonder if the gold faucets are actually gold. I look into the mirror and groan. On a good day, my hair is curly and bouncy, like copper coils. But on a bad day, frizzapalooza. And yep, today is definitely a bad day. Giving up on the hair, I put my bag on the counter and unzip it. And my stomach turns inside out. In my rush, I didn't check the grape juice cap, and now it's poured all over my nice dress. And not just that, it's soaked my sheet music, too. I lean back with a groan. Okay, I mutter. I look in the mirror, take a deep breath, and plant two fists into the countertop. No panicking.
Pull it together, Amelia Jones. Think.
I quickly zip my bag shut, grab my flute case, and run out of the bathroom. There's an exit to the back of the hotel to my left. I bust through the back door and into the parking lot behind the hotel. A dumpster sits to my right, and I duck behind it and spread out the contents of my bag. One soaking, grape juice-stained dress, and 3 pages of Handel's Sonata in E minor. With everything laid out in front of me, I unsnap my case and take out my flute, sliding the pieces together until it's nearly the length of my arm. I take a moment to exhale, lick my lips, and try to still myself. Breathe in. Breathe out. Find the tempo. When I'm ready, I begin to play. Not Handel's Sonata, but a simpler tune everyone knows. The Itsy Bitsy Spider. It's an easy drying spell for when you spill water on the floor or your laundry comes out damp. As I play it now, bursts of blue magic float from the flute and settle on the soaked items like butterflies. The air around me starts to heat up a little, which means the spell is working. But in my impatience and nervousness, I play a little too fast, and that, plus the heat of the summer, equals disaster. Because the papers and the dress burst into flames. With a yelp, I stumble backwards, nearly dropping my flute. The blaze leaps up, close to catching the garbage piled in the dumpster. Heat rushes over my skin. I raise my flute, hands shaking, and try to think of a spell to conjure water. Rain, rain, go away? No, that's another drying spell, the opposite of what I need. To reverse any spell, you have to transpose it to a parallel key, major to minor, or vice versa. But that takes a lot of preparation, and I've never reversed this particular spell before. My mind races, but it feels like every thought in my head caught on fire, too. All I can do now is watch the flames leap higher and higher, just like the panic in my chest. If I burn down the hotel, will they still let me into Mistwick? Focus, Amelia! Out of nowhere, I hear a swift flourish of violin music. I don't recognize the melody, but it's some sort of tarantella. Fast and reckless, notes popping in the air. I look around in confusion when a deluge of water dumps from the sky and douses the fire. It's like someone upended a bucket from one of the windows above. It splashes over my sneakers, washing a bit of the mud away. In the resulting puddle lie the remains of my dress and papers, mostly ashes now. Gasping, I look up to see a boy standing at the end of the dumpster, a violin tucked under his chin, his fingers flying over the strings, his bow slicing the air. He's wearing a black suit with shiny lapels, and I wonder faintly if he's here for a wedding or something. He looks very formal. He plays for another minute, closing the spell, then lowers the violin. He has brown eyes and dark hair that flops in all different directions, and the biggest ears I've ever seen. Wow, I say. You're really good. He grins. Drying spell gone wrong? He has an accent. British, I think. I blink, then nod. Itsy Bitsy Spider. He laughs, tucking his instrument into a case lying open at his feet.
I think your spider's a pyromaniac.
I let out a long sigh. My hands are still shaking a little. Without my sheet music, I'm going to have to play my audition spell from memory. Great. Thanks for that. I could have burned down the hotel.
I'm sure you'd have handled it, he replies with a shrug. I just happened to be out here for a quick practice and thought I'd pitch in.
Taking a second look at him, I ask, You're auditioning?
You bet.
He opens his jacket to reveal the number 241 on his chest.
I'm Jai. Jai Kapoor.
Amelia Jones. He frowns.
Amelia Jones. I feel like I know that name. Have you ever played in any of the big concert halls? London, Paris?
Yeah, a real famous one called My Treehouse. I laugh, thinking he's joking. Then I realize he might actually be serious.
Huh, he says. Must have been someone else I was thinking of. So, Mistwick, huh?
I kneel to pack my flute away. Been dreaming of it my whole life. You?
He shrugs. Don't really have a choice. My parents went there, and my grandparents. We Kapoors are a tradition at Mistwick, they say.
It's strange talking to someone who's been dreaming of Mistwick, too. Strange in a good way. Like meeting a person who's read all the same books as you. There were other music kids at my school, of course, but none of them cared about Mistwick the way I do.
You're brave, going in for flute, Jai says. That's the most competitive category, after piano. You'll have to outshine twice as many musicians.
I smile weakly. Brave. Yeah, that's me. Just, you know, always trying to do things the hard way.
I should have guessed flute would be one of the more popular instruments.
They say you can tell a lot about a person by the instrument they choose. You can play any spell as long as your instrument is capable of carrying the melody, but certain instruments have their specialties. Brass, like tuba and trumpet, are good at wards and hovering spells, for example. And flutes are particularly good at healing magic. Percussion is known for energizing spells, which is why you see drummers at sports matches a lot. And if it's elemental magic you need, the best choices are cellos or harps. Mrs. Parrish had told me years ago, when I'd first told her I wanted to go to Mistwick, that choosing a less common instrument, like the euphonium or organ, would make it much easier to get in, with fewer musicians vying for those spots in the Mistwick roster. But for me, choosing flute has always been based on one totally different and non-negotiable reason. It was my mom's instrument. And if that means facing tougher odds, then I'm ready. My insides may be slowly melting into trembling lumps of jelly, but I'm ready.
Violin for you, huh? I ask.
He nods, sighing a little.
It's not my favorite, but it's my strongest instrument. I wanted to go for guitar or saxophone, but my dad, Jai,
shouts a stern voice from the hotel door, and we turn to see a tall, serious-looking man in a suit like Jai's standing there. He has a maestro's gold pin on his lapel, polished to a shine. He has the same big ears as Jai, but a lot less laughter in his eyes.
You are supposed to be practicing.
I was, Dad, Jai says. But then
you thought you'd waste time clowning around.
The man shakes his head, his eyes stormy.
Get inside and take your seat and focus. It's time you got serious, son.
I lower my gaze, but see Jai grit his teeth.
Right, he says. Coming.
We walk in together. Jai's dad several steps ahead, his shoulders stiff and his black hair perfectly combed.
My dad says sax and guitar aren't serious instruments.
Jai finishes in a whisper. Then he makes a face. In ballroom A, which leads to a set of double doors labeled ballroom B, where the auditions must be taking place, a bunch of kids are pacing around as they sing or hum the melodies of the spells they'll be performing for the audition. Singing doesn't produce magic, so it's a safe and quick way to run through a spell. Mrs. Parrish calls it solfège, and sometimes we spend whole class periods just singing spells instead of playing them. The kids look like strange animated dolls, their eyes unfocused and their hands holding up invisible instruments. The sounds of all their voices and different melodies clash and harmonize. I can identify many of the spells they're practicing and realize most of them are way more difficult pieces than my sonata. But that doesn't bother me. It's better to nail a simpler spell than flub a fancy one. Still, I eye a few flutists, trying to judge how good they are, though most of them scooch aside and stop their warm-ups as Mr. Kapoor pushes through.
Your dad went to Mistwick, too? I whisper to Jai.
Yeah. Now he's with the Austrian Philharmonic. My mom was supposed to bring me to the audition, but she got tied up with work back in London.
At my blank expression, he adds, She's the Minister of Musical Affairs for the UK, same as my granddad was before her.
Jeez.
Is there a non-musical person in this kid's entire family?
Dad had to miss a performance to come here, Jai adds. Some big illusion show for the King of Denmark, so he's extra cranky.
Oh, I say casually, as if missing performances for kings is a totally normal problem to have. I can tell Jai is trying not to stare at me, but then he asks tentatively,
So, do you live on a farm or something?
I glance down at my work boots, jeans, and t-shirt, with a picture of Johann Sebastian wearing sunglasses, beneath the words, I'll be Bach, all spattered with mud and chicken poop. At least they seem to have aired out a bit. That, or I've gotten used to the smell. Yes. It seems to be the easiest explanation. Gran is standing outside the ballroom, looking around nervously and fidgeting with her driving gloves.
Where have you been? She asks.
She gives Jai a quick, suspicious look. Gran's gotten weird about me talking to boys, like they're all on the verge of dragging me to prom or something, then pulls me aside. Jai heads on in with a grin and a wave, and I see his father's hand clamp hard on his shoulder. There are a bunch more kids waiting in chairs, and they're all dressed like they're going to a funeral, a very fancy funeral. The girls wear black dresses, the boys wear suits like Jai's. Everyone is tuning up, but a sign on the wall reads, No magic. So it's just scales and random notes and handheld electric tuners, no spells. There are warded practice rooms farther down, where I see sparks of magic beneath the doors.
You're sure this is what you want?
Gran asks, her eyes searching my face. Gran, you know it is.
Amelia.
Her hand grips my arm so tight, I worry she's about to drag me out of the hotel.
This won't be like your school, where you can play rings around everyone else.
What are you saying, Gran? I frown. Are you saying I'm not good enough for Mistwick? Her eyes widen.
No, no, not that. It's only that you're so young to already have your whole life planned out. Maybe there are other things you'd like to try first. You never know.
Are you going to tell me I'm not allowed to audition? I say it louder than I'd intended, and a few people glance at us. My cheeks burn, but I don't look away from Gran. Are we really going to go over this again? Gran, this is what I want. This is the only thing I've ever wanted.
It would mean leaving me, she says. The school's on the other side of the country, you know. Way up in the Rocky Mountains.
Well, maybe it isn't about you, Gran. The words leap off my tongue before I can stop them, sharp as glass. She looks at me a moment, and my stomach clenches. I so do not want to argue with her about this now. Not in front of all those other kids, right before the most important audition of my life. Why can't she just tell me good luck? Or even snap at me to be serious and focus like Jai's dad did to him. At least then I'd know she wants me to do my best today. Then she says,
No, it's about her. You think I don't know that? I know you keep her picture in your flute case.
So what? You don't want me to be like my mom?
Of course I want you to feel close to her. I'm just scared of you trying so hard to be someone else that you never find out who you are. And music craft, Amelia, it's dangerous.
My chest pinches. Well, just because you're scared doesn't mean I have to be. She must see the determination in my eyes, because she finally sighs and shakes her head.
They aren't letting adults into the waiting area, so I'll be over at the restaurant, okay?
That's it. No hug, no advice. But that's how it's always been with Gran. I stopped expecting encouragement from her years ago. Suddenly, I wish I'd asked Mrs. Parrish to bring me here today, not Gran. Deep down, I guess I thought if I did well here, Gran would finally accept my magic and realize I'm not giving it up, not for anything. I just wish I understood why she hates it so much. Face still red, I walk into the waiting room, where it seems like a million pairs of eyes fix on me. I can't help but think they heard some of the argument, even though Gran and I were mostly whispering. cheeks burning. I take the seat beside Jai, who's got earbuds in, probably listening to his audition spell. There's a pair of double doors at the end of the room, where the kids go in one by one to audition for the maestros from Mistwick. "So many people," I say, taking out my flute and fitting the sections back together. Jai nods, taking out one of his earbuds.
"But Mistwick only takes the best of the best."
I swallow, hard. As a distraction, I point at his dangling earbud, from which a spell is blasting at top volume so it almost buzzes like a bee against his tuxedo, all drums and wild guitar riffs. "You're playing a rock spell for your audition?" He laughs, but glances nervously at the corridor, where his dad is still lurking.
"No, this just gets me in the zone. Besides, my dad would probably disown me if he ever caught me playing a spell that was so..."
He drops his voice and does an impression of his father.
"Unserious.
He says rock magic is for losers."
Jai rolls his eyes. At least his dad doesn't hate all music craft like Gran does. I wish I had something to listen to get me in the zone, but I don't think anything short of a hypnotizing jazz spell would work right now. My feet bounce restlessly, like they're ready to take off at a sprint for the doors. As if he can read my thoughts, Jai nudges me and says,
"Don't worry. You'll get in. We both will."
He pauses, then adds,
"Or we don't. And we end up as street musicians, removing warts for a pound. Dollar.
Or charming runaway chickens." He laughs.
"Never heard that one before."
I could make a living as a novice, sure, with a little silver pin on my collar. Anyone at all can be a novice, even without going to a music craft school. I'd just be unable to join a symphony, and I'd never get to play high-level spells. I'd forever be a beginner, never finding out my true potential. And worst of all, I'd fail my mom. I can still remember the day I found her flute. I was 7 years old, digging around Gran's attic for a sled since it had snowed the day before. Instead, I found a slender black case, and inside it, the impossible. A flute. Her flute. I could remember her and me lying on a picnic blanket under a big tree, and her playing a spell to make the wind rustle the leaves. I could remember her polishing the flute, sitting on a faded blue couch while I lay with my feet in her lap, listening to music on the radio. "Why do you listen to this?" I asked her. "It doesn't make any magic." "Recorded music is just sounds. It has to be played live to become a spell."
"Oh, Amelia."
In my hazy memories, her voice was always shifting, sometimes light, sometimes deep, but it was always kind.
"There is magic in just listening, you know. And if you listen close enough, you can hear music everywhere."
Then she let me hold her flute and pretend to play it, my fingers on top of hers as she showed me the fingerings for her favorite spells. In a way, the flute and my mom are one and the same. If I hold it tight enough, sometimes I can imagine it's her hand I'm holding. I thought it had been lost after she died. When I'd asked Gran about the flute, she got upset and hid it again. I was so mad that I tried to run away from home, but I only made it as far as Mrs. O'Grady's. She was the one who told me my mom had gone to the Mistwick School of Music Craft and become a maestro. And that's when I decided I would do everything it took to get there too. I would find out if I was good enough to follow in her footsteps.
241!
Shouts the woman in charge of the audition room doors, startling me from my thoughts.
"Well, here I go,"
Jai sighs, taking his violin from his case. "Good luck."
"Psh, who needs luck?"
He grins.
"The maestros like confidence, Amelia Jones. Don't forget it. Your magic is only as strong as your belief."
He gives me a thumbs up, then disappears through the double doors to the audition room. If it's confidence the maestros want, then they might as well hand Jai his diploma and golden maestro pin. I already saw him play like a master. He's got the swagger of one, too. I look around, my eyes falling on the girl beside me, who's obsessively polishing her oboe. "Hi," I say with a little wave. Where are you from? The girl's lips curl. There's something in your hair. I reach up and feel around until I find it. A fluffy white chicken feather. These kids are all serious, well-dressed, shining. I bet their instruments cost a ton. Maybe they've had fancy tutors and all their relatives are famous and important maestros like Jai's. I wonder if any of them have ever charmed a chicken for $5 or ridden their bike 3 miles through a rainstorm just to get to their music teacher's house. 242, calls the lady. I look up to see Jai leaving. He gives me a thumbs up. I guess his audition went well. My eyes follow him as he leaves, and I wonder if I'll ever see him again. I hope he gets into Mistwick. But then, why wouldn't he? His family is a tradition there. And so is mine, I remind myself. 242, the voice calls again, louder, and I jolt upright, remembering that I'm 242. The woman in charge of the doors waves, urging me to hurry. Her brown hair is tied into a sleek ponytail, and it swings as she shakes her head, her eyes taking in my appearance with disapproval. Sorry, I say quickly. 242? I nod. Through here, dear. Quickly now. And good luck. Drawing a deep breath, I walk past her and into the next room, clutching my flute case like it's afloat, and I'm about to jump into a stormy, shark-infested sea. Chapter 3. Sonata in Oops Minor. The double doors lead into another ballroom, this one even bigger than the first. The floor is shining marble, and my steps echo off walls paneled with mirrors. Fragments of light dance everywhere, thrown by the prisms dangling from crystal chandeliers overhead. The place is empty, except for four people sitting behind a table at the far wall, two women and two men. They watch me silently as I cross the wide open space. Three of them are wearing tuxedos, and the woman on the end is wearing an elegant black dress. Each one wears a golden maestro pin. It takes a century for me to reach them. Their faces are completely blank, eyes fixed on me. I feel like they can see every speck of dirt on my clothes, every bad and unmusical thought I've ever had. Now I know exactly why those kids before me left looking like they'd learned the time and place of their own deaths. All except Jai, of course. How had he handled these four stony-faced maestros and still come out smiling? And here I am with my muddy clothes and frizzy hair and no sheet music. For a minute, I can only stare at the floor, face on fire, wondering if I could get my audition fee refunded if I left now. But then I tighten my jaw. I didn't come all this way to chicken out. Anyway, it doesn't matter that my clothes are messy and my sheet music is burned to a crisp, or that I've never played in front of a real maestro before. Like Jai said, they like confidence. I lift my chin and remind myself to breathe. 242, says the maestro on the end. A grumpy-looking man with more hair in his mustache than on his head. I nod. In front of me is a small table, and on it sits a clay pot. Leaning over, I see it's filled with dirt, and on top of the dirt rests a small acorn. There's a music stand, too, but it's not like I have anything to put there.
Excellent. Another flute.
Mustache man sighs, as if there are a million other things he'd rather be doing.
You have before you an acorn and ample soil. I trust our expectations are clear. Now, what piece will you be performing?
Handel's.
Speak up! We can't hear you when you squeak like that.
I clear my throat. Handel's Flute Sonata in E minor. My hands shake like they're made of paper. Wiping them on my jeans, I stand and take two deep breaths before placing the silver barrel to my chin, my bottom lip lightly resting against the lip plate. Three of the maestros stare with flat eyes, but the lady in the dress gives me a small, encouraging smile. The instructions on Mistwick's audition website had been vague,
prepare a healing spell, it had said, and the rest of the instructions would be made clear at the audition itself. Now it all makes sense. Healing spells also double as growth spells if you know how to alter the tempo just a bit. And I've had a lot of practice with that, helping Mrs. O'Grady in her vegetable garden. But I'd counted on having my sheet music with me. I've played the spell 100 times, but right now, I can't even think of the first note. Panicking,